On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute and a half past the hour, and my afternoons are always made better when when showtime is. I said show, didn't I? My afternoons are always made better. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. My afternoons are always made better when the program is preceded by 2 hours of erudition on a level that is scarcely to be found in this country anymore. I'm not kidding when I say that there is no one doing more important radio in this country today than Dr. Bill O'Brien. If, for some reason, comprehensible only to the universe itself, you are not using the live hours between 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time to listen to Dr. Bill, well, go figure. The program is also available, naturally, at whiterosesociety.org. Ben has that archive all set up, and there should be a podcast as well. Wednesday, and the listener participates, okay to call and interrupt, then the show could expand. The Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution of the United States is a much larger project than simply 2 hours of radio. So look for that to expand in the future based upon your willingness to participate in the discussion and the dialogue. Dr. Bill has a long history of being an American history lecturer, but in the conversations that we had beginning this program, that was exactly what he didn't want to happen. So often, in a classroom setting, that is what happens. The professor teaches, and the students sit there with stony, glazed-over looks on their faces, uncertain whether they're supposed to think or for fall back in it or whatever. This is not that. Not that at all. And the only way for Dr. Bill to know if he's getting through is for you to participate. So there's that. Anyway, like I said last night, I didn't expect, well, I was not expecting to be here, but it became apparent that me taking off for Washington, D.C., and then almost turning immediately around and trying to get back was not a not a good thing, because I've got a meeting on Saturday that I have to attend, and there's a thing going on Thursday and Friday not far from here that I've been asked to attend. So Bo will take care of this meeting tomorrow, and he will do it admirably in D.C., and then he, who has been in Washington, D.C. for a solid month, will get to go home for a little bit. That's the way it is with the AIC campaign. A lot of work, and a little bit of rest. Of course, I mention it at the end of the program every night, but it is also beneficial to mention it at the front end. The AIC campaign's home is aicact.org, A-C-H-E-A-C-T.org. And in order for you to take action, as many of you have, and brilliantly so, I might add, the best thing to do is to go to aicact.org and read the science and read the bill and get busy on it. Because we need you. We badly need you. Sometimes two, sometimes three, sometimes very seldom four people are working in D.C. In the halls of Congress. It is manifestly more effective if you are calling your elected representative, writing to your elected representative, emailing your elected representative, and insisting that they sign on to the AIC Act. H.R. 526 in this, the 113th Congress. AICACT.org. Interesting conversation already underway in the chat room this evening. Folks talking about the habit that some people manifest the radio folks manifest for giving the right wing the time of day. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Ron asked that question the other day, and no, I could not do it. Because, you see, you are the ones who make all of this happen. Sure, I get in behind the microphone every day and start talking, but you pay the bills. You do. Sometimes when independent funds come along from things that I can do outside the show, I help out too. Lord knows we have over the years pumped thousands into keeping this thing going, as has Boss Man Wayne. But the day-to-day operations are run by you. Now, if I was looking in my inbox every day and I saw emails from you saying, gee, Bob, why don't you get an insane right winger on the program and give them half of your time that we pay to provide? Or not pay, contribute to provide. Well, I'd take that into consideration. But you're not doing that. Because there's enough of it just about anywhere you look. Right wingery. And we need a space that is clean and clear and safe from such hate and more or less from such absolutely profound ignorance. It's a struggle every month just to keep all of this going. I make jokes about keeping the plates spinning on the sticks in the air and everything like it's some sort of juggling act, but it's not. It's just a day in and day out grind to keep corporations paid to keep us on the air. And you are the ones who do that. I guess this is the point where I mentioned that last night we raised $55 out of the $150 we needed. We need to raise $150 this evening. That means we have a total we need to raise of $245. If we could get that done in the next 3 hours, that would be huge because there are bills waiting to be paid. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address of which you may avail yourself as you wish. So where to begin? Sometimes things present themselves to me and they seem almost made, well, tailor-made. In the Senate today, in the Senate Judiciary Committee consideration of what is being referred to as the bipartisan immigration bill, and I frankly think it's a little bit too early in the process to be using that word, because it seems to be driven entirely by the wants and needs of that sick, weird, bizarre cadre of people like Marco Rubio and the rest of the Republican minority of the Senate who actually run the place. They had consideration of an amendment offered by, and we talked about him the other night, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III of Alabama. Stan. His goal seems to be to merely muddy the waters, obfuscate the process, and keep anything from going forward. In this case, he wanted, and I think Sandra alluded to this the other night as well, biometric databasing. In this case, a biometric entry-exit system for, I'm not entirely sure who, but they want to use a photo tool. Well, that's not good enough for jug-handle-eared Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. He wants biometric fingerprinting, and so does Senator John Cornyn of Texas, who shares the same relative neighborhood in terms of sanity that is occupied by Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. I really do want to know if there's a fourth. If there is, I think I'll need a fifth. The nature of the discussions over these biometrics, which seem to have completely obsessed the right wing in this in the Senate at least, are apparently between fingerprints versus facial identification. And in a display of, well, I hesitate to use the word reasoning when I say right wing in front of it. Well, here's the poll quote from Senator Cornyn. My conversations with Senator Rubio, he happened to share with me that Disney World uses a, because Senator Rubio, it's a small world after all. More on that later. Senator Rubio is probably an expert on fantasy worlds. He lives in one. You may recall that he has reinvented his parents' history several times in the past several years. Senator Cornyn says, My conversations with Senator Rubio, he happened to share with me that Disney World uses a biometric system to ensure people do not commit ticket fraud. Really? Not a joke. Not a joke at all. Disney World ticket fraud is now the benchmark for the determination of whether or not we're going to have a bill that will speak to what is understood to be, at least by our side, a very serious and, yes, cruel problem. They have a biometric system to ensure people do not commit ticket fraud. That's kind of like voter fraud, I guess. Ticket fraud. If they are that easy, affordable, and good enough for the Magic Kingdom, they ought to be good enough for the United States. Senator Sessions' amendment would guarantee they would not be eligible for lawful citizenship until there is a biometric entry-exit system. So what he's done is, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III has tried to create a narrowing of the neck of the funnel. make sure that there can't be any immigration program until there's a biometric entry-exit system that's good enough for the magic kingdom of the world of Disney. Right-wing governance. Ain't it special? By the way, I had to go down and get, it was cheap blood work day down to the local Sawbones office. So last night after the show, I drank a bunch of water and nothing but water, didn't eat anything after midnight, and got up this morning and, you know, had enough water to get my pills down me, and there, my lumbago medicine. And, you know, we're already into the part of the program that makes me feel like I need some of Granny Clampett's rheumatism medicine, but that's another story. So I went down there and I got my arm stuck. I counted myself fortunate in that when I walked in the door, they had CNN on instead of Fox in the waiting room, which I thought was rather humane. Not that CNN is any great shakes, but as compared to Fox, it's Edward R. Murrow all day, all the time, every day. Yeah, you know. Two stories were dominating on Chicken Noodle News this morning. One was the breaking story of, based on an op-ed, of Angelina Jolie's elective double mastectomy. What a hellish decision process that must have been, that she underwent once she found out that she had the genetic marker that predicts, in some cases, breast cancer, and she has family members who died of breast cancer. Her mother died of breast cancer. And so she said she wanted to go public with what she had done to sort of take the stigma and the fear out of it. I was sitting there in that waiting room thinking, yes, that's the kind of consideration that you can engage in if you are extremely wealthy in this country and have full access to the complete panoply of medical choices in this country. Some of us, however, well, we show up on the second Tuesday of the month for Cheap Blood Work Tuesday. And relatively speaking, it is fairly cheap, I guess. $30 for a lipid panel and bun and creatinine and all of that stuff. It's another $30 if you want a CBC. It's another $30 if you want a prostate-specific antigen test. I had the $30 for the lipid panel, so that's what I got. But they were, I was sitting there thinking, yes, yes, and how much does it cost in Merca to get that, was it BRAC or whatever, genome test that tells a woman if she is carrying a ticking time bomb in her breasts? How many Americans don't, how many, and she talked about the fear of the C word. You know, we call it the C word. We don't even say cancer because it's terrifying. And I'm thinking, if you're terrified of the word cancer, imagine how terrified you are if you've got a family history of it and no way of getting the incredibly expensive genetic test. And goddamn sure no way of doing elective mastectomy with reconstructive surgery. Because that was what the prattling people on CNN. And you know, most women don't even realize that reconstructive breast augmentation surgery is something the insurance companies will pay for. If you've got insurance. That if you've got insurance part never got mentioned. Because the uninsured in this country are so far separated from the well-heeled toadies of the for-profit media that they are not even not just beneath contempt, but beneath notice. But that was what was going on. The other thing, and remember, we're talking about if it's good enough for Disney, it's good enough for America, said Senator John Cornyn of Texas. The other story that they segued into after the Angelina Jolie mastectomy story, of which I am not making light. I hope no one thinks I am. I am the son of a woman who survived a radical mastectomy at a time when most women did not. Breast cancer is something that is very, very serious to me. I have daughters. As the father of two daughters, breast cancer means a great deal to me. Only it really does. Because the three daughters of whom I am father live in a toxic waste sacrifice zone known as Central Appalachia, where poison enters the air and the water and the soil and their beings on a daily basis. And they ain't got no insurance. My failing as a father? Possibly. Maybe I could be out there saying, "Welcome to Walmart." And using all of my salary to pay for the insurance. If it was available, I did. Which it wouldn't be for, like, eons. But remember, the Magic Kingdom? The second story was about the fact that 120,000 Americans have signed an online petition telling Disney to return Merida from the movie, the Pixar movie Brave, to her original appearance. Because some artist at Disney, in regard to the line of toys and gimcracks and novelties and G-Jaws and stuff that they sell with every single movie, Brave was supposed to be a new kind of animated Disney heroine. Not the shrinking violets singing to bluebirds type, but this was a tough young red-headed woman. She was, of course, white, who insisted on existing on her own terms. And some designer at Disney has given her a Barbie body. You know, God, what would the body measurements be of a woman if she really had Barbie's figure? It's ridiculous. The numbers are just amazing, stultifying. It would be a horrible life to live as a human female with a Barbie shape. But anyway, they Barbied her up some, broadened the hips, narrowed the waist, with the bust. And so the director and the creator of the Merida movie was on there talking about how this was a complete rejection of everything that the message of the movie stood for. And 120,000 people have signed an online petition demanding that Disney unsexy Merida. And there are underlying issues there that I can certainly be in touch with and in tune with. Do we constantly, as the father of three daughters, I ask, must we constantly subject our daughters to these unrealistic, unattainable physical goals? Can women not be beautiful simply who and how they are? I say women because this culture that insists that women's appearance is more than that us guys don't, you know, really not so much. I mean, we get the business suit, we put the suit on. Oh, look, today I get to wear a tie with some purple in it. My, am I outrageous. Men are not taught nearly, although they're working on it, to worry nearly as much about body appearance. Anybody who's ever seen a puzzle-gutted guy in a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to pick up some lovely young woman knows that we sometimes forget we're hideous. But we're not. We're just men. But 120,000 people have signed a petition expressing their disgust with Disney for the way they have reportrayed an imaginary character. And insofar as it has to do with female body image, I have a sneaking suspicion that's probably people on our side. No way of knowing, pure speculation. But speculation based upon reason and common sense. 120,000 people. And I sat there thinking, gee, I wonder what 120,000 people taking action on the AKE Act would accomplish. What if I could get 120,000 people to sign a petition saying, stop wrecking real young women's bodies? You know, one of the things that mountaintop removal poisons affect most profoundly is the genitourinary system. Ovaries, fallopian tubes, uterus, bladders, kidneys, genitourinary system. Deadly. But no, in America, we get wrought and we use the networking. Again, I don't know how this networked out over Facebook or and again, that's another conversation about the nature of social media. You can get people, I don't know. If I do a thing on Facebook about the AKE Act and I put an effing cat in it, will it go around the internet a little faster? Just ask. So 120,000 people got worked up about an imaginary two-dimensional cartoon character. That was news story number two in the doctor's office at there on Cheap Blood Work Tuesday. I was real pleased. Cheap Blood Work Tuesday, they used new fresh needles and everything. I felt like somebody. Then I turned away from the television and thought, well, I'll get some reading material. And again, this is one of those I'm not effing kidding moments. There was a Paula Deen magazine, Paula Deen's Diabetes magazine. That was out. Grits and You. And Your Diabetes. Y'all, grits don't have to be out of your diet just because you've got the sugar. For those of you who put things like sugar and maple syrup on them, just quit. And put butter and salt in them like us civilized southern people do. So no. The remaining choices were of some six different issues of the National Rifle Association's American Hunter. Two of them, I'll note, were in use at the time I walked into the doctor's office for Cheap Blood Work Tuesday. American Hunter, the National Rifle Association, in my doctor's office. It's a good thing that I was nihil per os since midnight, nothing by mouth, else I might have had something to puke upon seeing that shameful display. One of the... Now, this is the American Rifleman, okay? Now, I hear the word rifleman, and being of a certain age, I think of Chuck Connors and that little kid. That, Paul! You know, that was his line in the entirety of the Rifleman series. Paul! Yes, son. And Chuck Connors walking around with that lever-action rifle, blowing various and sundry bad people away. Paul! And that's what comes to mind when I think of the word rifleman. But no. One of the issues, the one that was available to me, I didn't pick it up. I avoided it as though it were openly harmful, which it was. The one that was available to me was the American Rifleman. That's what it was, not American Hunter, American Rifleman. Issue that had, I'm not kidding, the Beckerhead and Godzilla from Wasilla on the cover in the doctor's office. It's only a 3-hour program, and I've already filibustered for something on the order of 28 minutes or 32 minutes, but we don't have time to go into what the Beckerhead and Godzilla from Wasilla have to do with appropriate hunting strategies for she hunts wolves from helicopters. God. That was my morning. So I come back here. Thanks, Ray. No. It only happens once a month, so I can't do that. Ray is suggesting you should start calling the Tuesday broadcast Cheap Blood Work Tuesday. I don't know, maybe it's Cheap Brain Work Tuesday. This is Titanic Tuesday, any way you slice it. Named after the Titanic wits of the right wing. But no, if it's good enough, now granted, there were some intelligent things being said. Senator Charles Schumer followed up by saying, it is true that Disney World used a fingerprint, and then when Disneyland went ahead to use their system, they used a picture because it was better. And then Dick Durbin, Illinois, said, Disney has two ports of entry. We have 329 ports of entry in the United States, which include land, sea, and air. If we're talking about being able to read cards at all ports of entry for those leaving the U.S., it's more daunting than it is at Disney World or Disneyland. There goes that complex thinking again. So that's the nature of the debate in the Senate, allegedly the most august deliberative body on the planet, which it ain't anymore. That's the tenor of the discussion. If it's good enough for Disney, if it's good enough for Minnie and Mickey, if it's good enough for Goofy and Pluto and Donald, it's good enough for you, citizen. The day kind of had a Disney feeling about it, or it developed itself as one. Because meanwhile, I wandered over to Raw Story, and I read a genuinely astonishing tale of the rotten excesses of the 1%. I have never been to Disney World. Obviously, I've never been to Disneyland. My elder sister loves going to Disney World. I would find it, apart from having, you know, being in the company of my sister, whom I dearly love, which I could do just as easily in many, many other places, I find the idea of Disney World akin to a season in hell. It's hot, it's crowded, it's expensive, and really, not much fun. I'm not a ride rider. I'm not into the roller coasters. I figure if I want to go fast and feel like I'm about to die, there's a two-lane highway about a quarter of a mile from where I'm sitting right now, and it's chock-a-block with coal trucks I can dodge. But at least I will be titularly in control of the ride. But no, you know, you can take out a second mortgage on your home to finance your Disney vacation. You can go on a Disney cruise. You can get outraged over the redrawing of an imaginary Disney character and feel like you're really doing something about problems in America. But for some, it's not enough. A story out of the New York Post on, today, paints a picture, and of course we understand, yes, it's the New York Post, so it's an exclusive in the New York Post. It's a story about how moms in Manhattan have figured out how to scam the otherwise deeply frustrating line-standing process for various and sundry rides and events at Disney World. Want to know how they're doing it? According to the New York Post, and again, that means this could be suspect, but insofar as it's a story of the 1%, I'm willing to take it as probably truthful. One % families whose precious pumpkins cannot be asked to stand for 2.5 hours in the Florida sun to get on It's a Small World After All have taken to hiring what are referred to in this newspaper article as black market Disney guides. And black market Disney guides hire themselves out at either $130 an hour or $1,040 for an 8-hour day. So you hire a disabled person to get you into the side access lines. My daughter waited 1 minute to get on It's a Small World. The other kids had to wait 2.5 hours. You can't go to Disney without a tour concierge. This is how the 1% does Disney. Because in the free market miracle of America, there has apparently arisen a business whose sole purpose is to facilitate, via the use of disabled persons, facilitate second grade line breaking for our financial and social betters. You know how if it's good enough for Disney, it's good enough for America, John Cornyn? Well, I guess once you've passed through the biometrics, there's... Interesting, this didn't come up in the discussion in the Senate today. So what 1% mommy does is she hires a disabled person, and there is a company in Florida that pimps out disabled people. The tour company in Florida gets the lion's share of the money. The disabled person gets a trip to Disney and some small portion of the fee paid. The one percenters then get a cut in the ticket price. Because the so-called black market tour guide is cheaper than the VIP guide that Disney is willing and the fast passes they sell to people. So not only are the 1% somewhat dishonest, cheap too. So if you have a disabled person, that disabled person may be accompanied by up to six others, and they go in to a separate line at Disney and get on the rides lickety-split while the proles stand in the Florida sun burning their asses up with some toddler waiting to get on It's a Small World After All. And it turns out to be much more like It's a Short Ride After All. 2.5 hours for that? I want to go again. No! And for me, this is a metaphor. This is a metaphor for the way that the 1% take rules that are rationally developed and derived and bend and twist them to their own ends, their own selfish, self-centered, egocentric ends. Because their toddlers need to get on the ride quick. And their toddlers, dipped by the heel each morning in SPF Avogadro's number, don't need to stand in line with the prole children. You know, that might rub off. And then we'll have God's own terrible time trying to teach little Muffin how to use the shrimp fork. She'll be pouring, you know, she'll be pouring sorghums all over her plate. Like one of them Cunninghams. Now, Ray telling me there are actually parts of Disney's Princess Castle only open to high rollers. Absolute truth. Wait, what? Ray, you're not telling me there's gambling at Disney World. High rollers? And what part of Cinderella's fantasy castle would that be, one wonders? But this is a little microcosmic metaphor for the entirety of our upside-down, twisted, sick-ass culture. Gonna hire a disabled person, and because Dream Tours of whatever, Disney Dream Tours or whatever, pimps out disabled people to be phony family members, so that the rich can get through the lines faster. Damn. It's Disney World. What's your hurry?
Well, actually, we've got dinner with the Gottrocks at 8 p.m. at Shay My Ass. And we need to get through here rather quickly.
Yes, Michael, I agree. Michael noting under the subject line, Disney, and Mickey Mouse is the Antichrist. Ray pointing out, most community mental health centers now hire out disabled people to work jobs that the center gets most of the money from. That's a disgusting practice. Which leads us to another story. Isaac sent this along. Do you realize the degree to which y'all format the show? It's pretty brilliant. And I don't know how the magic actually works. Where one of you sees one story, and you're not communicating with the other person who saw the other story, or the other person, and boom, 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 and they line up like dominoes. I've seen that happen more times than I can count, and it absolutely fascinates me. So, down in Florida, Disney Dream Tours is pimping out differently abled people for the sake of a scooter chair and quick access to the ride lines. Am I making too much of this? Or is this story as disgusting to you as it is to me? I never know from one day to the next. I bring something to the air, to the program, and hope you'll find it as interesting as I do. I can't recall ever prepping a show thinking, well, I'm going to tell those people what they need to know today. Because the icky, self-aggrandized qualities needed to come to a conclusion like that are frankly beyond me. But a lot of people do, I guess. Or, pursuant to the conversation that was taking place in the chat room before showtime, said it again. More time for the program to start. There was an ongoing conversation about a certain recently mentioned radio host's proclivity for subjecting you to right-wing babble. Lottie asking, does learning to use the shrimp fork come before or after selecting grades of Russian caviar? It's before. It's before. Because, well, some of those caviar words are a little complicated, and it can take some one percenters up into high school to learn them. Lottie noting, yeah, I'm past disgust. So, as noted, we get through this process, and yes, there are disabled people being pimped out by Disney Dream Tours of Florida or some such outfit. And you may rest assured Disney Dream Tours of Florida is not giving the whole $1,030 for the 8-hour day to the disabled person who is providing the convenient fraud for the one percenters who are zipping through the special access lines. Hell, if they were, I think it was at least a decent, racket. $1,000 a day? Hell, you could work half a year and be into $180,000 a year, which even in Florida ain't bad money. But if the disabled people who are being pimped out for that spot in line are making anything more than minimum wage, I'll be damn surprised. And it ties in nicely with this story out of Iowa City, Iowa. Isaac sent it along. Judge slashes land, AP story. Judge slashes landmark $240 million EEOC verdict to $1.6 million. EEOC, of course, standing for Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. It's a short story. A judge has slashed a landmark $240 million verdict for $1.6 million for 32 mentally disabled workers who suffered years of abuse by their caretakers. The defendant in the case was Henry's Turkey Service. Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas. The case was tried to a jury, tried and true in their own right. And on May 1st, they delivered a verdict that Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, discriminated against the mentally differently abled men. They were hired out by Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, to work at an Iowa turkey processing plant. And frankly, turkey processing plant should be enough of a clue to let you know that it was one of those hell on earth situations. The judge, U.S. Senior Judge Charles Wally, W-O-L-L-E, pronounce it any way you want to, reduced the jury's verdict from the $7.5 million in damages each man had been awarded. Imagine the tales of horror that jury must have heard in order for them to write $7.5 million verdicts for each one of the men, 32 mentally differently abled men, who were, in essence, indentured out to a turkey processing plant in Iowa. You know, every Thanksgiving we roast a turkey and we say, you know, this turkey's awfully good. Why don't we do this more often? We say, yeah, maybe we will. And yet, oddly enough, when July rolls around, the idea of roasting a turkey in the oven and heating up the... not so much. There's a reason. I rather loathe Subway, but I have a little Subway card with reward points on it, so I used that yesterday for a sub, and I saw the sign that says, all cold cuts on the BMT are made of turkey products. The bologna's turkey, the ham's turkey. The turkey is ostensibly turkey. Parts is parts. The jury heard such a sickening tale of horror that they gave each man, each of the 32 men, $7.5 million in damages. The federal judge, Charles Wally, cut that to $50,000 per man. Now, why is that? That's because the case was brought with reference to the Americans with Disabilities Act. And the Americans with Disabilities Act was written with grades of damages in them, such that, for instance, if a business has fewer than 101 workers, the maximum awardable judgment is $50,000 per employee. Most of us think small business means little mom and pop operations, you know, on the corner of 5th and Main or whatever. You'd be surprised the number of billionaire companies with fewer than 101 employees. Henry's Turkey Services of Goldthwaite, Texas was apparently some sort of pass-through employment indenturing operation that managed to keep itself beneath 101 employees and thereby abuse the law as it was written. So, on June the 10th, the judge will hear evidence to consider how much interest is owed on the judgment. Hint, it's not going to rise to $7.5 million. America, where good intentions to do right by the differently abled are immediately perverted and gamed by conscienceless, arguably sociopathic profiteers for purposes of their own wealth and or convenience, to my way of thinking, there's not just a hell of a lot of difference between Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, and Disney Dream Tours of Florida. Or, for that matter, the one percenters who hire out either one. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And this is about as strange an opening segment as I can remember in quite some time. But that's what makes all this so fun. It's also conversation radio. And I encourage you to jump in and participate. The number, of course, 304-658-3333. Or via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And you're welcome to jump in either way. Green News Report is on its way, this being Tuesday. Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And another gentle reminder, we've gone through an hour of radio now, and no support has come in to keep this all going. We are trying to raise $245 this evening. As thus far, we stand at zero. Light up the phones. That, or, by God, I'll filibuster another hour. You don't want that. You really don't want that. This is Conversation Radio. This is the Horn.
Necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities, Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam, I couldn't be founder of my big home. The bees are buzzing in the tree to make some honey just for me. You look under the rocks and plants and take a glance at the fancy ants, then maybe try a few. The bare necessities of life will come for you. Look for necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities. That's why a bear can rest at ease. Just bare necessities of life. So just relax, yeah, in my backyard. If you act like that, be act. You're working too hard. Don't spend your time just looking around for something you want can be found. You'll find out you can live without it and go along not thinking about it. It tells you something true. The bare necessities of life will come to you. They'll come to you. They'll come to you. They'll come to you. Oh, yes!
It's Tuesday, May 14, 2013.
There will obviously be fewer firefighters. There'll be fewer engines. And hopefully, we'll be able to manage this situation.
Sequester budget cuts hit federal firefighting response during an early wildfire season. More good news for Tesla Motors. Scientists accidentally discover a new way to make cleaner steel. Another city votes for solar on all new building construction. Plus,
a principal challenge to all of us of life and death proportions is the challenge of climate change.
Secretary of State John Kerry bluntly criticizes the U.S. for climate change inaction.
All of those critiques and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Deadly giant snails have been found in Houston. Quick, saunter for your lives.
Get it? Because they're
snails are, yeah.
Slow, yeah. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, remember when Mitt Romney called the new American auto company Tesla losers?
Solyndra and Fisker and Tesla and Enter1. I mean, I had a friend who said you don't just pick the winners and losers, you pick the losers.
Well, they're singing a different tune in right-wing land these days. Here was Fox News just a few days ago.
This is encouraging. Tesla, the car company, first new American car company in more than 50 years, I guess. Huge success now.
Huge success.
Oh, imagine that. Who's the losers now, Mitt Romney?
Yeah, they just magically forgot about the federal loan guarantees that helped Tesla Motors become the fabulous car company that it apparently is. The luxury electric car company last week scored the highest praise ever from Consumer Reports magazine.
Ever, and not just for electric cars, but for any car.
Indeed. And it's not only turning a profit and paying back its federal loan 5 years early, but Tesla is now also outselling similarly priced all-gasoline cars sold by Audi, Mercedes, and BMW. Of course, conventional gasoline cars don't receive a federal tax credit, but apparently there are lots of rich people to buy these really expensive cars.
Yes, like Mitt Romney.
Cleaner steel? Scientists at MIT say they have stumbled upon a way to manufacture steel without emitting as much carbon dioxide by using electricity rather than fire. They were working on a way to build future moon bases. Conventional steel manufacturing generates 2 tons of carbon dioxide for every 1 ton of steel, but they found if you pass an electric current through molten iron oxide, you can purify steel without fire and without massive carbon dioxide emissions. This is potentially a very big deal because steel manufacturing contributes about 5% to total world greenhouse gas emissions.
And they all laughed at Newt Gingrich talking about building moon bases. Who's sorry now?
Meanwhile, here on Earth, the Western wildfire season is already off to an early and ferocious start, but federal agency officials are warning that budget cuts mean fire agencies will have fewer firefighters on the ground, said Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack in a press conference call earlier this week.
The sequester clearly has an impact. In addition to the sequester, we had an additional 2.5% cut on top of that provided to USDA. So that means basically that there's no question there'll be fewer acres that are treated. There will obviously be fewer firefighters. There'll be fewer engines. And hopefully, we'll be able to manage this situation.
And when houses and towns start to burn down, who is going to be blamed for that, you suppose?
Well, last year they blamed Obama.
And this year they'll blame him again, even though Congress approved these cuts to federal firefighters.
Yes, and now Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and Agriculture Secretary Vilsack are calling on homeowners to help out firefighters and do their part to reduce fire risk around their homes.
Everybody get squirt guns.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry bluntly criticized the U.S. in a press conference in Sweden on Tuesday, saying he regrets America hasn't done enough to address climate change and that it is a global security issue.
I have to say, I regret that my own country, and President Obama knows this and is committed to changing it, needs to do more. It's not just an environmental issue, and it's not just an economic issue. It is a security issue, a fundamental security issue that affects life as we know it on the planet itself. And it demands urgent attention from all of us.
Of course, he didn't say what exactly the U.S. would do, but he's in a summit for the multi-nation Arctic Council to sign the Arctic Marine Oil Pollution Preparedness and Response Agreement for countries to begin to coordinate response to oil spills in the Arctic. Finally, some good news. Sebastopol, California has become the second city in the United States to vote in new building codes requiring solar panels on all new homes and all new commercial buildings.
There you go. Thanks for the good news. Take that, losers. For much more on the stories we covered today and the ones we didn't have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you're responsible for helping to keep the Green News Report on your public airwaves. Please consider a donation to help us keep doing exactly that. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm a loser. I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost, there is one love.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, and a little bit of follow-up, perhaps more than you even want to know, about the story Isaac sent in regarding Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas. But I said to you that one wondered what a jury had to hear in order to award $7.5 million to each of 32 men. Well, here's what they heard. And thanks again to Isaac for doing the follow-up on this. I would have gone digging around after the show, and we would have probably wound up doing following up tomorrow night, but it would be better just to do the whole story now. This is one of those stories. This is a story of capitalism. Understand that. Alpha and Omega. This is a story of capitalism. This is a story of how the drive for wealth will literally grind people's bones to make the wealthy people's bread. The story itself comes from the Houston Chronicle. The story itself is from 2009. Texas state officials, and again, we're time traveling here. If you're on hold, please stay that way. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. I feel like it is necessary to get through this. State officials confirmed they are working with Iowa authorities after 21 mentally disabled men from Texas Some in a deteriorated state were recovered from a rancid bunkhouse run by a turkey company. Now, you have to think a little bit about the stream of commerce here. I went off on some tear last week about having some sort of laws for the humane treatment of humans. PETA, bless their hearts, have gone in and shown us the brutal conditions to which animals are subjected in meat factories. And I'll say up front, I despise the very idea of being a vegetarian. I don't have anything against people who make that choice. I just like meat. I like meat. Meat is yummy. It's tasty. Succulent. But folks like Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, are hard at work on trying to make me into some vegetarian glop eater. Because I find it more and more difficult to separate my conscience from my taste buds. Jesus Christ. The men, all employees of Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, and who range in age from 39 to 71. 71! 6 years past Social Security age. 9 years if you count 62. Were found, and I guess that's the best verb available, living, and I guess that's a marginal... How about we're just found? I think living at this point is, only in its bare, the most bare minimum sense of the meaning of the word. We're found living inside a 106-year-old school building in Iowa with trailers attached in the tiny eastern Iowa town of Attalissa, a 30-minute drive from Iowa City. Iowa officials acting on a complaint about the men's treatment. What is it about Iowa? Well, you know, it's the heartland of the nation and everything. Interestingly, I have a soundbite from Steve King for the, later in the program. It's one of those, ha, 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 that crazy right-wing bastard kind of stories. I haven't heard him take to the floor of the House to decry what happened to these human beings, you know, because he's a member of the culture of life, Steve King is. Iowa officials, acting on a complaint about the men's treatment, arrived at the bunkhouse to find boarded exits. Space heaters took over the job of a boiler that gave out in 2002. In some areas, plywood was all that separated the men from the harsh Midwestern cold. And roaches were everywhere, according to officials who first entered the living quarters of the men, some of whom had lived there for 2 and 3 decades. 71, you know, like since 41 years old. David Werning is a spokesman for the, Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals in 2009. He said, "It's quite an eye-opener." Eye-opener? No. An eye-opener is what happens when you're not feeling so good from the previous night and you get up the next morning and you blast down a Bloody Mary just to get things started. That's an eye-opener. Especially if you load it down with the hot sauce. That's an eye-opener. A whole bunch of human beings who are mentally disabled, mentally retarded. I hate the word. What word do we use? Being warehoused as virtual slaves, that is not an eye-opener. Back in 2009, he said the case was prompting questions in both Texas and Iowa about how the men got there and why they were capitalism, why they were, remember the part about the roaches everywhere, nothing but a single sheet of plywood separating them from the harsh Iowa winter, blah, blah, blah. Why they were paying more than $1,000 a month for their room and board and care. Remember when Jan wrote in last night to say, Bob, it's a failed state. We've been a failed state for years. Yeah, this is one of those. The men, all of whom have mental retardation, worked in area meat processing plants. You remember the kosher meat story from a few years back? The Rubashkin family? That was basically running a humongous dodge, abusing undocumented immigrants to run their meat packing plant. Yeah, at least that bastard is in prison somewhere. They cleared, the men did, at least according to one relative, as little as $65 a month after their housing fees were deducted. Their Social Security federal disability checks were signed over to Henry's Turkey Service. They were deposited in individual accounts under the men's name at the Mills County State Bank in Goldthwaite, Texas, southeast of Abilene. Sherry Brown's brother Keith was one of the men. He'd been at Henry's since the 1970s. The turkey processor that time forgot. Sherry Brown, sister to Keith Brown, lived in Fayetteville, Arkansas at the time of the story. She said, "My question is, where's the Social Security money going? They're saying they're taking money for room and board and working at the factory." Kenneth Henry is the owner of Henry's Turkey Service, and he merely replied, "Ma'am, you're going to have to talk to our attorney." The attorney did not return phone calls. Twice earlier, the place had been visited by Iowa officials. State health care facility regulators visited the bunkhouse in 2005 and 2001, but on both occasions found the men to be functioning well enough not to be classified as dependent adults. But their conditions, and is it their conditions or is it the conditions of their virtual enslavement, eventually deteriorated to the point that the Iowa officials finally stepped in. One of the more horrifying statements in this entire article is the fact that questions had been raised for decades about this outfit, this operation. The state of Texas even ended its relationship with Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas. And in 2009, Stephanie Goodman, spokeswoman for the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, said, "For the past 10 years, we haven't had any contract, agreement, relationship with either Henry's Turkey Service or Hill Country Farms." Put a little space between, yeah. An FBI spokeswoman was contacted and said, "Well, you know, there's an investigation." Iowa Workforce Development's Carrie Kuntz said, "We'll be looking at wage payments, deductions, those kinds of things." And if they're paying wages in Iowa, they need to be paying unemployment. It appears they're paying it to all to accounts held in Texas. Now, can we backtrack for just a damn minute? That EEOC case that we started all of this with? $50,000 damages. On how many years? 30 years of disability payments? Hell, that's more than $50,000. But there's very little in the way of a lobby for the poor, the forgotten, the neglected. There's not much to lobby for them. There are no lobster lunches on Pennsylvania Avenue for them. Isaac, who is apparently as horrified as me by this story, West Liberty Foods paid Henry's Turkey Service as much as $11,000 per week for the disabled men's labor. Then Henry's Turkey Service paid the men a combined total of between $340 and $500 per week, or about 41 cents an hour, according to the Des Moines Register. About 41 cents an hour, because they were charging him room and board and food, because they were providing, what's the official term in federal legislation, a sheltered workshop. You can almost hear the Republican now, can't you? Well, God damn it, they were free to, it was an at-will employment situation. They was free to quit any time they wanted to. Jack in Shreveport with a question. Doesn't the 50K cap also discourage lawyers from taking these cases? Why, yes, it does, because at the time of the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Republican Party screamed that this would cause the entire American economy to collapse. And that them lawyers would be out there just preying on honest business people. I really remember driving up and down the road, hearing that garbling gas bag who was probably at the time wasted out of his mind on opiates, blithering on about how it would be the end. And you know, they said, "Oh, what? You want to raise the minimum wage by a goddamn nickel? It'll be the end of the American economy." Yeah. By May 7th, 2010, the Associated Press was reporting a federal report castigated a Texas company for abusing and underpaying several mentally disabled men who were housed in a ramshackle building while working at an Iowa turkey processing plant. The report from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission said Henry's Turkey Service underpaid the men at least $1 million over 3 years, verbally and physically abused them, committed several major violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The report was given to Sherry Brown, whom we mentioned a little bit ago, and said, "I want to know where the money is." She said, "I want these people held criminally responsible." Where's the rest of the... Where's the rest of the money? Hell, where's Henry's Turkey Service? As far back as May 2010, the AP report says a phone number for Henry's Turkey Service couldn't be found Friday. A number in Goldthwait, Texas, listed for Henry's Turkey Service affiliate Hill Country Farms, was answered Friday by a woman who confirmed it was the company but declined to give her name. She refused to comment on the EEOC report and would not take a message from the AP. Additional calls went unanswered. Called West Liberty Foods was referred to the company's lawyer in Des Moines, Dan Waters, a lawyer in Des Moines who apparently has no goddamn conscience and did not return the phone call. And here's a real walk-away sentence. Sylvia Piper said the report confirms what she first encountered at Henry's Turkey Service in the early 1980s when she worked for the ARC of Iowa, an organization representing the mentally disabled. She said she turned her findings over to the Iowa Department of Human Services and assumed the matter had been resolved. Nothing seemed different in February 2009, she said. She's now director of Iowa Protection and Advocacy. We were looking at people who were being subjected to expectations of working 7 days a week and getting up at 3 a.m. living without heat. The things that they were enduring, most of us could not even imagine or maintain. After the situation in Iowa came to light, the U.S. Social Security Administration tasked the protection and advocacy agencies in all U.S. states and territories with reviewing programs that employ mentally disabled workers at sub-minimum job wage jobs. And that led to what? Henry's Turkey Service faces a $900,000 state fine in Iowa for alleged labor law violations, which it has appealed. No, hell, we don't deserve that. All we was doing was, you know, they'd just be sitting around drawing government money that hard-working American taxpayers pay for. They'd just be sitting around watching the prices ride or something, sitting around staring at the TV box, and we give them meaning in their lives. We took their money. We don't need no fine. Sherry Brown said she's not satisfied that all the current litigation surrounds wages and pay. The money's not important, she said. I want criminal charges. Isaac went out and found us a picture of Henry's Turkey Service President Kenneth Henry. He looks a little like a turkey. Waddles and everything. You'll notice in all of that, there has not been, I've not read anything that suggests that Kenneth Henry of Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, has ever even seen the inside of a jail. Long time ago, when I was a little baby liberal, I opposed the death penalty at all costs. Now as I grow older, I find myself thinking, death penalty. Kenneth Henry works in a sentence, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. We don't commit murder in the name of the state. But please, honest to Jesus, out of everything they found, there wasn't enough to send Kenneth Henry up the river for the rest of his natural-born life? Or maybe just put him to work on one of those turkey lines? Well, no, he's got some money. That means he's decent people in America. F all. So, just remember. And this is the one that got caught. Or this is another of the ones that got caught. Just remember. Next time you go to the grocery store. Next time you're standing at the deli counter saying, well, that Cajun turkey breast looks pretty damn tasty. It'd be good on a sandwich, a little lettuce, tomato, a little bit of mayo, maybe some of that sourdough bread. There is nothing that is happening in this country that is being sold to you and being sold to me that does not have some level of cruelty attached to it. It is laudable that we talk about some things being cruelty-free, dolphin-safe, tuna, what have you. I admire that. But you cannot find a single item in a grocery store in the United States, whether it be effing strawberries or effing turkey, that is human cruelty free. Not even the organic stuff. And there's no move towards some sort of a certification along those lines. The USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, has set forward guidelines which set up nutritional analysis that you can read on the back of any given product. Let's see. This would be Tabasco sauce. Serving size, 1 teaspoon. Servings, about 30 servings. Amount per serving, calories zero. Total fat, zero. Trans fat, zero. Sodium, 130 milligrams. Total carbs, less than 1 gram. Sugar, 0 grams. Protein, 0 grams. Percent daily values based on a 2,000-calorie diet. But damn, it's tasty! And somewhere along the line, see, what's not in there? What's the United States recommended daily allowance of human cruelty? I know. That probably marks me as some sort of an ass, but I'm a humanist. I don't want cattle subjected to cruelty as they go toward their end. I don't like CAFOs. I don't like the idea of pigs suffering, or chickens or turkeys. But somewhere along the way, kind of like those PETA videos, you know, they'll show you the horrible things that the people are doing to the chickens. But they're not so very good at showing you the horrible things that the money people have done to the human beings to make them do the horrible things to the chickens. What would be the USRDA of cruelty in this country? How much cruelty could the American people really stand? How much cruelty can the American people tolerate? You heard, I'm sure, about the Mother's Day shooting in New Orleans. Well, along the lines of something that I'm talking about, of what I'm talking about here, Charles Pierce, who is one of the absolute best there is out there in the blogosphere, real live, honest to God journalist with journalistic chops to last a lifetime, which have been created over the course of a lifetime. Wrote about that shooting in New Orleans. The following. Quoting a news report, also on Valair, a 59-year-old woman who didn't want to publicly give her name said she was inside her home about to go outside and see the parade when she heard shots ring out. She said that from her porch she saw hundreds of people scattering, running. It's sad that people can't gather together and celebrate, she said. You don't just go into a crowd and fire into a group of innocent people. And in his post, Mr. Pierce writes, well, ma'am, in fact, that is exactly one of the things that you do. If you happen to be an American in the year of our Lord 2013 and you happen to have a gun, because an insane fascination with its firearms is only one of the major symptoms of the fact that our country has lost its mind. He continues, maybe the video games and the gun show loophole. Back up. We all agree that, say, Somalia is a bad place for there to be quite so many guns because of the general breakdown of social and cultural order. Maybe we should examine our conscience that way. Maybe the video games and the gun show loophole and universal background checks and mental hygiene are all a sideshow. Maybe the real question we should be asking ourselves is simply whether or not the nature of the country itself makes the proliferation of firearms unhealthy here, in this place, at this time. We keep telling ourselves we're a good people, but we also are an armed people. We keep telling ourselves we're a good people, but we're an armed people, and we're killing and wounding ourselves at an alarming rate. We keep telling ourselves we're a good people, but we're an armed people, and we're killing and wounding ourselves at an alarming rate, and we keep looking outside ourselves for answers because we're a good people, and this should not be happening to us the way it is. Maybe we are not a good people. Maybe we are a scared and angry people. Maybe we are not a good people. Maybe we are a scared and angry people and we've armed ourselves because we are scared and angry. Maybe we're a scared and angry people and we've armed ourselves and now we are shooting each other because we're scared and angry and we can get our hands on some guns. Maybe we are not a good people. Maybe we should think on that for a while. And there you go. It's the same thing. Maybe this country was born in unrighteously shed blood. Maybe this country was born in genocide and kidnapping. And maybe the paranoia that has white peoples going apeshit for gun ownership is some sort of, what do we call it? Race memory? That we've killed almost entire peoples before and we think maybe we may just need to do it again. Or maybe because the first so-called white people to come to this country came here for profits. There's a big difference between human migration that results as because of climate or geographical changes or the water level rises and where your tribe lived is underwater now, so you have to get moving. There's a big difference between that and going somewhere thousands of miles away because you think you can get rich doing it. Most of mass migration over the course of human history, unless I get a note from Dr. John telling me, no, Bob, you're wrong about that, has happened because of subsistence and survival instincts. There was no survival instinct that drove the Jamestown colony or the Mayflower colony or the Massachusetts Bay colony or the caravels and coming out of the kingdom, the empire of Spain. None of that. It was all for wealth. Granted, in some instances, particularly the Spanish and the Portuguese, they had the skirts of the church to hide behind. By the way, the first painting, art historians have identified what they think may be the first European painting to depict New World human beings. They think they've found that. It's a tiny detail in a fresco in Rodrigo Borgia's apartments at the Vatican. They're naked and they're dancing as priests and conquistadores look on. They were kidnapped and brought back, some of them, as evidence. They were enslaved, but didn't enslave very well and chose to die instead. It was the native people's resistance of enslavement that led the Europeans to enslave different people. Charlie Pierce is right. Maybe we're not a good people. And therefore, maybe a not good people can tolerate untold amounts of cruelty as long as it does not come to them. Kind of explains the teabaggers, doesn't it? Explains the entirety of the Republican Party, doesn't it? They can gratuitously unleash hell itself on earth. As long as the hell doesn't touch them and they've got some sort of patina of honor to hide behind. As long as they can play Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA and nobody ever suggests to them that maybe if they're really the religious people they think they are, they ought to be contemplating God Forgive the USA. The Germans committed the Holocaust. The Spanish killed upwards of 20 million Native Americans. But the American people are the only people thus far ever to use a nuclear device, a single weapon that has the greatest possibility of being able to almost instantaneously wipe out all life on the planet. And we have drilled our way into the possibility of an apocalypse that would make the John of Patmos blush as some sort of piker. Wait a minute, no, I said rivers of blood up to the knees of the horses. Jesus, the hell, I didn't know what I was talking about. You guys are serious. Maybe there's no USRDA of human cruelty because we have an almost unlimited ability to countenance cruelty as long as it doesn't touch us. Is that, in the words of George W. Bush, uniquely American, or is that human? I don't know. There are manifest acts of cruelty to be found just about anywhere you look on the planet. Tamerlane, the Turkic warrior, was said to have been responsible for something like the deaths of 17 million human beings. We've mentioned the Spanish, we've mentioned the U.S., we've mentioned the Germans. Julius Caesar is said to have almost single-handedly depopulated northern and north-central Europe, or northwestern Europe. He cut down every sacred grove that he could find of the ancient religion of the Celtic peoples and slaughtered their priests. We call them druids today. I don't know. It seems like some countries are trying to verge away from some of that, are trying to learn from past mistakes. I think you could say that to some degree or another of Europe now. But not us. Not us. We've sent a few tons of grain around the world to provide subsistence existences to people in the most extreme of circumstances. And we look and we say, my, what good people we Americans are. And we sit down to a turkey dinner in November every year, never thinking for an instant that a mentally disabled individual may have worked 12 hours and been paid 41 cents for each of those hours to put that butterball on the table. Damn, I hope there's something funny comes up later in the program, because I'm about ready to walk away. So whoever this is has been very, very patient. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, he's patient when his buddy Isaac sends in something like that.
I tell you, Bill, that just, I didn't see that coming tonight.
Man. I mean, there's a man who's very, very hip on a lot of areas, and you get it on the nose with that one. There's been, there was a show that Murrow used to do, God, back in the dark ages of television, and he found several of these different work camp areas in his exposés, and we're talking 1959, 60, or when he was still alive. I can't remember when he died, Murrow. But he did several exposés of this work stuff, and it's something they like. I mean, you know, it's something they like to do because there's a big profit in it. And you get people that, you know, I imagine if you looked at these guys that were in this camp, you'd find several social weaknesses that could be exploited like hell by these people. That's what one of the things they managed to learn how to do. You take a guy who can't get a job doing anything else, or there was a lot of minor league misdemeanor stuff that could be tacked into work camps, and it was not only that. I mean, hell, my uncle was a pretty hip electronics guy, and he got a ticket in some small town in North in suburban Cleveland, and but he nailed him because the law said that those radar guns had to be tested. They had to be
tested and calibrated.
Calibrated, yes, and they weren't. And he walked away from that suit, or from that ticket. But very few people can do it. And I don't know. I wonder where did Isaac find that story? My God,
it started out with a fairly straightforward story. Judge slashes landmark $240 million verdict, and I guess that's what we need to come back to. These men were awarded a collective verdict by via a suit by the EEOC of $240 million, and this federal judge took it upon himself to cut the verdict to $1.5 million because he said that was the most he could charge Henry's Turkey Service of Goldthwaite, Texas, because they had less than 101 employees, and that was set forth under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, for my part, Bill, if I'm that judge, I'm going to be sorely tempted to let the verdict stand.
Yeah.
Let the verdict stand and let the case go up and let some appeals court overrule me, but I get to go home knowing that I did justice.
Right. Yes. And plus, these guys have to go out and hire more attorneys and to defend themselves. So in the long run, the money may not be going to the right place, but it's still costing these.
And see, this is... Bill, there are implications to this story that reach far beyond the horrors that these individuals were subjected to in their own right. There were, for instance, mentioned in the story, individual bank accounts at a bank in Goldthwaite,
yeah,
Texas. That means there were bankers at Goldthwaite in Goldthwaite, Texas, who had reason to think something was up, because what the hell is Henry's Turkey Service doing with those people's social security checks, putting them in individual accounts, and then who drew the money out?
Yeah, where'd it go?
Where'd it go? And what did the bankers know? And when did they know it?
See, nowadays so many things are just buried and hidden, and you know, people don't read anymore. I mean, a buddy of mine is a retired history teacher, and we were talking about the book The Jungle, for instance. And,
oh, yes.
Nobody reads that anymore. Or Grapes of Wrath, for God's sake. Which was... That's what kills me about some of these... Some of the country singers, some of the guys out in California, they've forgotten how the hell they got there. How their families got there, and how unwelcome they were when they walked into those places in California.
Yeah, the Bakersfield Sound.
Yeah. Those folks were not that well-liked by the average person. And by the way, where did you find the Louis Armstrong piece?
Oh, that's from the soundtrack to The Jungle Book.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they...
I figured with the Disney theme that I'd been working and bare necessities, I just thought it worked.
Yeah, one of my proudest things was taking my dad to see Louis I think I was 16 or 17, so it was like 59 or 60, and took my dad for Father's Day, and watching the old man, because him and his generation, Lewis and all those guys were just, we thought that we were big with rock and roll performers, but those cats, when it came to jazz performers, they were right there. Duke Ellington, Count Basie, all of them. He got me involved in listening to that stuff, and God, is it good? But just here's the question: how long is this going to go on, Bob? Do you think people will ever catch on, or?
I at this point, I think we have to analyze what we think of people before we ask whether or not they'll catch on. How many people? And I'm not talking about the Horn family commune.
No.
But how many people would hear that story? How many Republicans, okay? Because that's roughly 47% of this country. How many Republicans would hear that story and say, well, that's just free market?
Yeah.
You know, Isaac is really bird-dogging this story right now. And he sent me a report from April 2010. From the Des Moines Register, in which a writer by the name of Clark Kaufman says, the owner of Henry's Turkey Service said Tuesday that his mentally retarded workers were as vulnerable as small children, but could have easily left the company's Atalissa bunkhouse if they didn't like the conditions there.
Hell, they didn't know there was probably any better conditions in the world, so depending on where they came from. Yeah, I could go into depth about what they did to me when I was a kid. My grades were so good, they wanted me to go to major work classes, and I refused because in 1952 you had to travel by regular transit. They didn't have any school buses for kids in those days to transport. You know, you took the local transit system, and my mother said, "Man, she said, son, you're 9 years old. I'm not going to have you traveling all over the city by yourself." And because I refused to do it, they stuck me in Catholic children's home where it was like Lord of the Flies with holy water, you know. It was so that's why I'm such a strange dude. When push comes to shove, I'm as hostile as they can be sometimes. Just depends how soon you start out in life with that kind of stuff. And anti-religious as hell. I remember some of those nuns, I remember one of them holding me and slapping me back and forth, and I'm like 10 or 11. And Bob, I was measuring the distance between my left hand and her eyeglasses. Yeah, I'm surprised I didn't just haul off and knock her on her religious butt, you know?
Yeah.
Because I had an attitude that carried over a lot, and, you know, we shouldn't have that. We're not supposed to have that attitude, but what else can you do when you hear stories like this? Isaac, congratulations on that one, buddy. He's a man that he'll find stuff that is so funny that it'll leave you laughing. He'll find music that is so good that, the one bunch of guys that he works with, or has worked with in the past, man, it's such great music, you know, but when he hits the truth, it's a hard smash. There's no doubt about it.
Well, and this one just keeps getting creepier, Bill. Check this out. Again, this goes back to April 2010. Officials from both Henry's and Iowa Workforce Development have each said that their work on the case was hampered by the Texas Attorney General, this is 2010, who seized 40 years' worth of company records 14 months ago and then refused to provide copies to Iowa regulators or Henry's attorneys. The Texas Attorney General has not filed any charges in the case and has declined to say why it will not release copies of the records. However, company officials say some of the seized records pertain to the state of Texas's controversial partnership with Henry's Turkey Service.
Yeah.
You know, the private sector can always do it better than the government.
Yeah.
In the 1960s and 1970s, the state-run Texas Rehabilitation Commission sent Henry's more than 600 mentally retarded men who had been living at state expense in an institution. The commission also provided the company with money that was used to train the men for jobs in one of Henry's labor camps, and then located in Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, Missouri, and South Carolina. The Texas Commission later gave the company's founder, Thurman Johnson, an award for his efforts to employ the disabled. The Texas legislature, citing the savings realized from moving the disabled men out of state, praised Johnson for his, quote, humanitarian spirit.
Oh, crying out freaking loud. Yeah, what a humanitarian. Well, I just,
So far, Isaac has not found Kenneth Henry's obituary, which is kind of,
It's amazing that, as I said, Murrow, Edward R. Murrow had a couple of shows about these labor camps. I forget what the series was called that he was involved with. But, like, what's happened to this kind of news expose? You know, it's disappeared.
Well, it's been made. When you think, for instance, about these gag laws that have been developed in recent times, they are. Whenever you read a story about them, Bill, it's like, I know these are because of the damning video evidence that's been gathered by PETA and other similar organizations documenting animal cruelty. With all due respect, horse feathers. Okay. This is probably as much about keeping Iowa, Kansas, Illinois, Missouri, South Carolina.
Yeah.
The state of Texas was subsidizing little concentration camps.
Yep. And they're doing a lot of it with kids today.
Arbeit macht frei, baby.
Yeah. That's, there's places I try not to eat in. But then again, you never know where people are getting their stock of whatever they're selling. I mean, you just, first of all, just based on the idea that what the hell am I eating here?
Well, what this system has done, Bill, is to make it unavoidable. It is almost entirely unavoidable that you will participate in this system that runs on cruelty.
Yeah.
Human cruelty, animal cruelty, what have you. It's not like you're going to get a less cruel burger at Wendy's than you are at Burger Thing or the Clown.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you turn around and you see stories that Chili's in Manhattan's going to shut down over the Obamacare. And lo and behold, working conditions inside fast food restaurants are so lousy that a fast food strike started in New York, it spread to Detroit, and now it's in St. Louis.
Oh my gosh. It's about time. I mean, the strike. I had a fella I knew when I was a kid, he owned an Italian restaurant, and he had been working at Fisher. Well, I'd been working for Body by Fisher for GM, and he was part of one of those sit-down strikes in Cleveland where their family was getting food into the strikers, and people have forgotten this whole thing. Hardly anybody mentioned, after Katrina, the song that was written by the guy that wrote Short People.
Randy Newman, yeah.
He wrote that song that had the end chorus was six feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. When the bankers went down there and blew the protective dikes between New Orleans and the sea where the Cajuns lived, and flooded them out. This has been done over and over again. I mean, I don't know how much you know about the. I imagine you do the. The rains in the late 30s and the flooding on the Ohio River Valley.
Oh yeah, when you mentioned the Mississippi River Delta, I was thinking of Herbert Hoover having those persons of color chained together, trying to save the dike and letting them drown.
You see, we don't hear enough of the honest to God truth of what has transpired. I mean, these aren't ideas that we think this is going to happen. It has happened. And, it's too much for me anymore, but I'll clear the decks, but, I gotta give Isaac credit on this one. Because he'll send me something where he'll bust my chops and make me laugh at myself. And, he snuck a line in the other night. at the end of with an email or a call to you, and it had me laughing because I couldn't really answer it correctly because it it was one of those things that you don't want to go into a depth with. But, you know, he hit it right on the nose here because this has been going on and on. And for anybody who doesn't think so, they should look back and see what was... let's go back to the Native American and what was done to the Eastern Native Americans, Cherokees and the Seminoles and...
Shawnee and Iroquois. Yeah.
Yes. And then we bring in the African person... And then we can bring in the Irish that were indentured servants and were used like, the worst possible way. If they could be treated in the worst possible way, these SOBs that would employ them would find that way and use it. Well, anyhow, I'll let you go. And, man, my congratulations, Isaac. He really found one there. It makes you wonder half the time whether you should... Bake your own bread and subsist on your own bread and water. I don't know. Anything you eat, you wonder about. But then again, on the other hand, I don't care. If you don't eat anything, you'll die of starvation. So what the hell choices you have here, you know? And as you've seen with the people in the poor areas of the country we lived on things, and, you know, you talk about the situation of gallbladders and such, you know. It was what we had to eat. And anyway, I'll let you go, but Isaac, congratulations. Take care of yourself, Bob.
Indeed. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Mr. Stress, Bill, calling from Cleveland. Onward we go to the Skype line. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm all right. That story from Iowa, I mean, it's so disgusting. And how is that judge, you know, how are these people going to sleep at night cutting back those settlements?
Well, I mean, they're jury verdicts for starters. So you've got to, and he just said, look, you know, this is an ADA suit and there's limits on verdicts. Because, and I have no doubt that limit is there.
I know, but it's just, it's so egregious what happened, and there's so many other actors who are, complicit too. I mean, like you said, that the whole, laundering aspect of it.
Yeah. Somewhere in Gold Plate, Texas, there's a banker saying, yeah, I sure hope they don't ask me any questions.
No, I mean, it's not really much more to say about that. You covered it pretty well. It's just so horrifying, and, it just makes you wonder, where else this is going on, because we know that any kind of government inspection has been sort of annihilated due to the Reagan era, you know, and for decades now, we haven't had any sort of reasonable regime. We've just been living on luck and unlucky for these people like this, and who knows how many more who are being subjected to this sort of exploitation in this country right now at this very moment.
Well, exactly. I mean, consider that passage from the woman in Iowa who inspected the place and said nothing had changed since the 1980s. That is 29 years. That was going on in the 1980s. She turned it in, and people upstairs did nothing about it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's just, you know, the culture is now so anti-regulation, and, you know, that sort of inaction has to be propagated fully because, you know, most people don't benefit from not having a democratically elected regime involved in inspection. So the only people who are benefiting from this are the people who are extracting profits. But they have to have help, which is, I guess, what the propaganda and ideology is for, because no one in their right mind would accept this, i.e. just regular working folks. But they are,
but
and it's happening.
But, you know, meat killing is a pretty brutal industry. You know, Bill mentioned the jungle, which is an expose of the meatpacking industry from the early 20th century and the horrors that were taking place there. The FDA, or USDA maybe, I'm not sure who, has regulations about how many parts per million of rat feces can exist inside a hot dog. I mean, it really. And,
yeah,
you know, hair and fingertip parts and whatever. That there's an acceptable level of that. And there is no American who would walk into a meat processing facility, some CAFO out in Nebraska or whatever, and say, I'm okay with this. At least there's no American who would do that who had a functioning conscience. Because some level of ex post facto justification or rationalization has to take place. Well, you know, there's no, thank you, Margaret Thatcher, may you continue to be dead, there is no alternative.
Okay. Well, yeah, and hence there's no slaughterhouses with windows, you know.
Precisely. You know, I think about that Smithfield Meats packing plant down in Tar Heel, North Carolina, that people said you could smell for 50 miles before you got to it. Now, that thing runs at 32,000 hogs a day. Just let that number ride around for a while. And of course, this is where what I'm getting at. The workforce are brutalized. You know, they were making women who were 8 months pregnant stand on the kill line gutting hogs that were going by at, you know, probably 15, 20 miles an hour.
You know,
with a razor sharp knife, and you're 8 months pregnant.
You know that the Obama administration is instituting this program to let these poultry companies self-check themselves, right?
Right, because, you know, we can trust them.
And speed up the line. Not only eliminate inspectors, but also allow their lines to run faster. You know, so there is no concern for the workers in this, deregulation scheme. And he just had a meeting with upteen CEOs recently discussing, you know, how to provide regulatory relief, if you can even get with that terminology. It's really, you know...
Where's the burden? Where's the regulatory burden?
No, but it's just the whole, you know, the whole idea that, you know, when Nixon came into office, he was still operating under the legacy of FDR, and Obama's operating under the legacy of Reagan. I mean, it really is pretty clear what's going on here. So, you know, there is no political space for any progressive anything. It just seems to all be going in reverse. But unfortunately for us, you know, these stories, like in Iowa, they're going to keep popping up because the no government light regulatory ends up to Bangladesh. That is ground zero for where it's all heading.
Yeah, and meanwhile, in some effort to put a smiley face on their complicity there, you've got all of these major retail outlets saying, well, you know, we've banded together and we're going to help institute new safety regulations for Bangladesh. Great, go tell that to the widow. The orphan.
Not only that, but if anything comes out of this, it will be just to make the factories or whatever a little bit safer, anything but unionization. So if you have a choice of building buildings a bit more strenuously or allowing unionization, the whole world will side on, let's get a building that can stand up. They, you know, the idea is to have cheap labor and outsized profits. That's the name of the game.
Right, so the building stands up. What about the hell that's going on inside it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and that's just not, I don't think this is just, you'll hear soothing noises until time passes, you know, unless you have a mass sort of withholding of labor in that country, or the island is overtaken by climate change, ain't nothing gonna stop there.
Well, I
mean, where are they going to go next? I mean, we're getting to the point now with the globalized scheme where the amount of cheap labor is, you know, kind of coming to a head, because I'm not too sure where they're going to go next, because they're not going to go back to China, because China is raising their wages constantly now.
One word, Siberia.
Well, you know, I don't,
yeah, it's
you
gonna
know.
Be, look, it's going to be quite inhabitable.
Yeah, well, at any rate, it's, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with the culture of cruelty, much like rape culture and any other sort of horror you can imagine, is just quite fine in this country. I mean, people are fooling themselves if they think that this is A-okay, what's going on here. You know, I thought it was interesting that 19 people got shot up, but why wasn't that splashed everywhere 24/7?
We both know the answer.
Okay, well, you know, I'm just
going
to write.
A, nobody dead, and no white people dead, and shot up black folks.
Right, so that was the end, you know. So it's just the same, you know, it's just outrageous. But, I mean, to, you know, maybe bring a little levity to your show, Chris Matthews is wondering, oh, my God, is Obama going to have to do a buck stop here moment? He's being engulfed by the scandals. I don't know why I find it all funny, but it's sort of like, listen, if it keeps Social Security and Medicare from being destroyed,
yeah, keep him
keep
busy.
It coming.
But here's one for you. Now, the Senate is ostensibly controlled by the Democratic Party, right? You know, the party of the people. Yeah, don't laugh too hard. The Senate Agriculture Committee met today, and they approved $4 billion, with a B, in food aid cuts. The Democratic Senate Agriculture Committee. $4 billion cut.
Why?
Well, you know, because we can't afford that kind of debt.
Well, no,
In November, you know, I was talking about that turkey in November. A Recovery Act provision is going to expire, and federal food aid, you know, food stamps, otherwise known now as SNAP, is going to. I guess I was just being overly optimistic when I was prattling on about that $3 a day and don't spend it all in one place, Sandra. Because come November, it drops to $1.40 a day.
Well, no, but I also think that there's going to be some extractive interest that might interfere with that cut. Because, see, food stamps, you know, that's a boondoggle for Big Agra and other investors, too. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, I haven't looked into that, but I'm surprised because...
Well, here's the fun part.
All the food stamps, that money is, you know, those food stamps...
That's a subsidy to Walmart.
Right, it's a subsidy to a lot of different interests, you know. So, and so what, they're planning on merging it with some existing House bill or what?
Well, the House is taking up its own version and wants to cut $21
billion. Okay,
if I understand it correctly.
Right, I mean...
But here's the fun part. Wait, Sandra, here's the fun part. The vote in the House or in the Senate Ag Committee... I mean, if somebody wants to do the quick homework and give us the names of the members, or maybe who you know how the vote broke out, the vote in the committee was 15-5.
In the House?
No, in the Senate. In the Senate.
Okay, so those were like all the Democrats voted for it then.
I'm thinking. I'm looking now just to find a Senate Committee on Agriculture. I'm trying to find the membership. I mean, we won't know who voted which way, but it's funny. There's no drop down. Oh, about. There we go. Membership. This is what I was saying. Majority is led by Debbie Stabenow. The other majority members are Pat Leahy, Tom Harkin, Sherrod Brown, Max Baucus, Amy Klobuchar, Michael Bennett, Joe Donnelly, Kristen Gillibrand, Heidi Heitkamp, and William Cowan.
So all those people voted for it.
Well, I don't know who did out of that number. The Republican side is a rogues gallery. Mitch McConnell, Thad Cochran, Pat Roberts, Saxby Chambliss, John Boozman of Arkansas, Mike Johanns of Nebraska. Remember, he was the ag commissioner under Bush. John Hoeven of North Dakota, Charles Grassley of Iowa, and John Thune of South Dakota.
Well, I mean, yeah, but, you know, when you have that congressman from, I think he's from, I don't know if he's from Minnesota, but Ellison, when he's saying, well, he's from the Social Security Party. I mean, there's some, you know, divisions that are happening now that are, you know.
Just, oh, bright line fractures.
You know, just really, you know, and I'm sorry, a lot of it is at the feet of Obama with his, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna reform entitlements, you know, and it's just kind of like, yeah, good luck with that. You know, how's that working for you? Because it's not working for the Democrats, and they stand to lose even more ground in Congress behind just even a mere suggestion of it, because it took, 3-2-1 for the Republicans to start running against him as soon as he came out with that.
Sure.
And it's just, you know, it's so predictable. My favorite at the moment is this, H.R. 1406, Working Family Flexibility Act of 2013.
Oh, the We Hate Effing Overtime Bill?
Well, overtime, 8-hour workday, 40-hour work week. I mean, that is what is at risk with this particular toxic piece of legislation. And, I mean, it's just a full-on assault on, the middle class, working class, the poor. It's just incredible. And then you look at the makeup of Congress, and you see it's just a bunch of self-funded rich assholes on both sides. They write their own check, and they get elected. And those people don't care about their constituency.
No. And this story out of the Ag Committee, it gets even better. They cut SNAP, food stamps, by $4.1 billion. But they increased crop insurance subsidies. So maybe that's the inoculation against that, against what we were talking about a few minutes ago, Sandra.
Okay.
You know, where ConAgra and the boys don't pick up the phone and say, you know, what do you assholes think you're doing? Now, they're still going to have to take that call from Bentonville, Arkansas, because that ain't going to play well. And the folks at Kroger's and Ralph's ain't going to like it either.
No, but these people are so, they have such effed up ideology that doesn't operate in reality, that they actually think, well, we can just keep cutting, and the 70% consumer-based economy that we have is somehow going to continue. I mean, you got Obama talking about programs to increase our export. Well, where the hell are you going to export to, idiot, when the whole global economy is slowed down? Not everyone can be an exporter. That's just economics 101. A lesson that Germany needs to have, too, because they also think that they can just export their way out of everything, and they're wondering why.
Yeah, every now and then I go wandering around a Volkswagen or an Audi or a Porsche or a Mercedes-Benz lot, you know, just for the pornographic value of it. And I don't know how you export $100,000 automobiles if ain't nobody got to buy them.
No, but I mean, you know, you had Obama last night talking about he needs to govern, blah 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 blah, you know, as he's being sort of overrun with Benghazi and all these other scandals. And it's kind of like, well, you are all into compromise, and how's it working for you? You know, I mean, this man cannot be this bubbled out if he seems to think that, oh, I'll just have another dinner with the Republicans and work something out. 'Cause they're into their, it's time to start impeachment mode, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Full on. And Daryl Issa did a very good job of kind of laying low in the weeds for a couple of years now. But he, you know, he's going to come out with the fangs dripping. By the way, of all the, you know, you can, I think we can say pretty clearly that Benghazi's a load of hooey. Okay? It's a manufactured bunch of, you know, it's whitewater all over again. The IRS thing is screwed up, but when you look at it a little more deeply, there's a reason it turned out the way it is, and that, you know, the Chris Hayes tried to explain it last night. And great, but who's watching? But the AP thing, the telephone records thing.
I'm sorry. I know, ain't that the truth about who's watching? Yeah, no, the AP thing, that shit is for real there, though.
Yeah, that's, it is. And I love the fact that within something like 12 hours of Charlie Pierce writing, okay, Holder's got to go, which I think is pretty much a rational reaction, we suddenly learned that Attorney General Holder had recused himself from that decision.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I have a hard time. Listen, Torquemada didn't go. It took a lot for that fool to go. I don't see Holder going nowhere, especially if he has to investigate the executive branch. It's going to be, you know, I do understand why they're bringing up Nixon now. You know, Obama, he ain't going to lose that fool. That's his protection.
Well, two words did come to mind, and I'm ashamed of myself for even thinking it, but, you know, John Mitchell.
Well, exactly. I'm just saying. I don't, you know, they I love it when the media talks about the layout of the government as if it's functioning as it should. We know since at least Clinton that the attorney general has not been the attorney general that you and I learned in civics.
No. The attorney general is supposed to be the single most independent
right.
member of the cabinet.
Like all these horrible prosecutors around the country, except all of a sudden, the attorney general is more like Robert Duvall in Godfather 2.
you mean where we need a wartime consigliere?
Well, no, you know, I love when he dismisses him. We don't want you involved in this aspect, but you understand what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, oh
don't
yeah.
Get me started on that's my movie. Okay.
Yeah, tell
that
Michael
movie,
I always liked him. It was only business.
That has amazing, amazing things going on. And if we might digress for a minute, my favorite is when Michael is riding in Cuba, shit goes off. He's like, oh no, fool. This place is for real. Okay, what's going on here? You know, when he's talking to them fucking creep saying, no, these people ain't messing. I don't think I'm gonna be invested in this country. That's like my favorite. I'm just like, yes.
Well,
it's amazing sort of observations all through that movie that are just like, yes and yes.
Even the mob thought it was a mob movie. It ain't a mob movie. It's an America movie. It's a movie about capitalism. It's a movie about this, you know, the capital wealth decision making.
It is. I mean, you know, when homeboy's getting a slice of cake. I mean, it's just a great movie. I mean, the other Godfathers were okay, but that one in itself is just wow. You know, they got lucky. I'll go visit them later. I mean, it's just nonstop.
Yeah. We really do need the Horn Film Festival somewhere at some point, you know.
Yeah.
I'll roll Dr. Strangelove with commentary, and then, you know, the room will fill up for screening Godfather 2 with Sandra.
Oh man, that is like. But anyway.
I was just going to throw out there real quick that this excuse out of Holder that I recused myself. Pardon me, time out. Is this the Attorney General? Instead of recusing yourself, why don't you say, let's don't do that?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't understand the dividing it all. I mean, there's no way. It just isn't making any sense. When his ass stepped up to make some sort of statement, his statement should have been, I'm resigning. That would be it. But of course it's not, you know? And, you know, you think about that Brennan, you know, this is all around what he's been up to. It's just so creepy because it's like, well, no, we don't have to worry about that home bitch who went to jail for the Scooter Libby thing. What was her name?
Oh,
Judith Miller.
Judith Miller, yeah, the stenographer.
No need to do that. Let's just take all the information and find out who the source is. You see what I mean? It's outrageous.
Yeah, and he did conveniently hang somebody out to dry. He fingered Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole as the guy who signed off on the subpoenas or the phone records. But the issue that I raised, remember those national security letters?
Mm.
You know, the ones that come with a statement that says you can't, the first rule of national security letters is nobody talks about national security letters.
The librarians.
Yeah, and you can't even tell your lawyer and all blah, 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 blah.
Right.
See, that was my first guess, is that there were no subpoenas, but that instead that had been dropped. But no, now Holder says that there were subpoenas issued, and that James M. Cole was the guy who signed off on it after the Attorney General said he wasn't going to get his little pitties dirty on it.
No, but isn't this the same administration that's using laws from the Wilson administration to sort of punish people? I mean, listen, it scares you because they have no compunction about slamming the shit out of whistleblowers. So when you hear that they're circumventing the First Amendment and getting people sources, you have to wonder, well, who the hell are they going to arrest and throw in Langley or wherever the hell they put Bradley Manning? Who's next? That's what I thought. I just thought whistleblower.
Right. And the who's next? Apparently they were so desperate to get whoever leaked this sensitive national security information that they were willing to, because you don't do something like this and think you're not going to get caught.
Bizarre, yeah. No, it just seems to be way up north.
And of course they're playing the be afraid, be very afraid card. Eric Holder said the leak put the American people at risk. That is not hyperbole. It put the American people at risk.
Oh, yeah, well, that's, you know, no. Right. I can't, you know, I'm not buying none of that. 9/11, okay?
Yeah, 9/11. It's just, 9/11.
It's just, yeah, exactly. I'm just sort of,
And then it was most pathetic because he played that one card. He said, I'm proud of what we've done. We've been, I think, very aggressive in our enforcement of the civil rights laws. So that's code, right?
So that's just Orwellian speak there. Yeah, I got you.
But it's some code, too. You know, standing proud in the tradition of Rosa Parks and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. No.
But I mean, you get what I mean.
Yeah. I do wonder about this particular scandal, you know, where it's going.
It's anybody's guess. I mean,
but my favorite though is, you know, when it broke, of course the sort of hardcore Obama supporters, oh, well, is anybody but AP reporting about AP? I'm like, OMG. You see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, there's always going to be that was a little bit of what went down with the Chris Hayes piece last night. It was an attempt to, make the IRS story, which is just really dumb, into being some sort of irrational act that was brought about by Republican policies, which it may be. But the optics on it, Sandra, are that the IRS was targeting right-wing organizations, yada, 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 yada. I mean, there was an editorial cartoon that I saw this morning on my feed it showed this ramshackle house in the middle of nowhere and a couple of guys in tri-cornered hats standing on the bowed porch. And the sign said, Tea Party Headquarters, Middle Finger, Indiana, or something. And one of them looks at him and says, maybe there ain't nothing to our paranoia after all. Meanwhile, there's a couple of black helicopters hovering going, foop, 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 foop. And the other one says, what's that noise? And that's, you know, that's how it's being portrayed. You know, poor John Stewart about had an aneurysm on the air over it. You know, just for the how damn dumb it is.
Well, and it, you know, there's a really there's a nasty history of, you know, the IRS targeting people. So, I mean, it's just bad. It's really a bad optics. But I'm also like, well, they don't have nobody in charge, right? They can't get anybody appointed. Is that one of those appointments that are vacant for the last eight years?
The guy who was running it on an interim basis was from the Bush administration.
You know, I mean,
And the minority in the Senate's going to let the new commissioner of the IRS try never? Because that's how they operate.
But it's just a worry because, of course, in real politics, you get nervous when a president is under siege domestically when there's, you know, some war that can happen to take the heat off. I mean, that's horrible to say, but that's how things operate in this country. So I just get nervous, if Obama can't act, because he doesn't strike me as someone who's going to say, oh, damn, for the next 3.5 years. So, you know, he's going to do something. And it's something that's a bit of a worry. If he gets shut down domestically, well, then there's always, you know, whatever war I can sort of do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I remember when that came up during the Clinton years. It's pathetic. There's a combination here of, you know, right-wing stupidity trying to create a crisis out of Benghazi. You know what? With the AP thing and the IRS thing, they may forget about Benghazi.
Well, no, apparently the polling is suggesting that, you know, of course Americans are like, you know, they think that it's been overplayed, too. And I love the fact that nobody knows where the hell it is. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Gaza? Gaza?
I thought it was a percentage thought it was, like, in Cuba. I'm like, oh, wow.
Well, and in line with that, I laughed out loud last night. My daughter, Margie, showed me some Facebook post by somebody who apparently despises gay people. And the Facebook post was as follows, Sandra, and you might want to sit down and strap in. Rosetta Stone didn't sit on that bus for your gay ass to have civil rights.
No way. It took me a minute because I'm thinking language. I didn't know what you were talking about. Oh, my God.
Way.
That's good. Listen, did you see this breaking? The coordinator of Army Sexual Assault Prevention Office accused of abusive sexual contact. This is yet another.
Wait, is this the Army guy?
No, this is another one.
This is the second one?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's not from yesterday.
Make it stop.
It's today.
Did he get the shit beat out of him, too?
I have no idea.
Because the Air Force guy just got stomped.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, let's flash back to that elephant. That's my other story.
Oh, I love that. It was in Zimbabwe. Poachers went on to protected lands to try to get them some elephant ivory.
And they shot at one, and I guess they missed because next thing they know, some big ass foot was coming on them, and that elephant killed one. Like, trampled. I mean, what are you thinking to me? I always got the impression that elephants are fairly bright animals.
Oh, they're big brains.
One time only with a big-ass gun, or they're going to get your ass, and I guess they got them.
What do they call that stuff? What do they call that stuff between the elephant's toes? Slow poacher?
You know, it's like, I know it's hideous, but I just thought, I feel the same way when, oh my God, one escaped some circus and they like trample over some, trainer. What can I say? I just think the elephants, they need to be where they need to be.
Yeah. Just,
you know,
but you know what? Every now and then we get one of these stories about the animals fighting back in one of these circumstances. And I realize there's probably some human tragedy on there somewhere, and maybe this is a self-indictment based on my previous how much cruelty can we stand. But you know what? I'm sitting there going, go, elephant, go. You know, rooting for the elephant.
Yeah. You know, that story, I was like, wow, okay. But no, this, you know, you heard about the blind survey that they took where they had some like almost 30,000 women said they had been sexually assaulted in some manner. The blind survey, and then when they looked at what was reported, it was like 3,000, and then the convictions were like 200, like a horrible pyramid, upside down pyramid.
Right. Because.
And, I mean, so it's an epidemic, like to the point where, well, if you sign up for the military, you, much like if you go to prison now, expect to be, raped.
Yeah. Just expect it.
Well, that's going to happen. It's just, and I didn't realize with military justice that even if the jury convicts one of these assholes on high, they can overturn that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's
A general can say that that his judgment outweighs that of the jury. And you know, the thing is, it's not like a court martial jury is made up of yahoos.
Mm.
I mean, it's officers.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the general can say that, you know, the lieutenants and the captains and the majors and the colonels and they didn't really understand.
Mm.
Or they were unduly harsh.
Well, I was listening to this interview and this woman, you know, she said, well, it's like if the brother raped the sister and the father had to decide the punishment. I was like, OMG. And,
ooh,
you know, that's a nice image, right?
Yeah.
But that's about this, the setup.
And these,
the
these two sexual assault prevention coordinators, the Air Force guy was in Northern Virginia. This guy is at Fort Hood in Texas.
Mm.
And he was the one, he was in charge of the sexual assault prevention program at 3rd Corps HQ in Fort Hood. So, you know, from Texas to Virginia, you kind of look and go, this doesn't seem to be localized. This looks like it's a culture problem.
Mm. Well, come on. It is definitely a culture problem. And it's a, it's just outrageous because it's nothing more, it's nothing but hierarchy in the military, and it's completely dysfunctional. You know, you're going to let women serve, but by the way, if you do serve, expect to be raped? No, you didn't sign the dotted line for that bullshit.
Right, for your country. For your country.
I mean, good Lord. I don't know. I just, it's just sort of shocking, but I guess it's good that it's all come. I mean, I don't even know what to make of it. It's so horrific, you know? I just think, wow.
Sometimes it just feels like it just feels like everything's coming apart in this country.
Well, yeah, there is that.
I mean, you've got another gun story today.
What was that?
Where the kid was getting a ride home from school with one of the school safety officers, and the kid got in the car with the school safety officer, and the school safety officer was wanting to make sure that everything was safe. So he reaches over to put his gun in the glove compartment, shoots the kid in the leg.
Mm. Is the kid going to be okay? Or?
The word is that
there's an artery too that can anyway. Ugh.
Well, they're describing the student who suffered an injury to his leg but will survive. But
whatever
it was described as a significant injury. I don't know how many insignificant bullet wounds are there.
Exactly.
You know, if you're on the receiving end of the bullet wound. You know, that whole Monty Python thing, you know, it's only a flesh wound, I'll bite your head off. You know, that's funny, that's a joke.
Oh, but
this is real.
But rest assured, you can lob off your tits and write about it and get all kinds of praises and thanks.
Okay, so I'm not the only, because, you know, I immediately heard and read that thing and I thought, okay, there must have been some pretty harrowing business on here. But she could afford the genetic testing, and she could afford the best surgeons, and she could afford the plastic surgery. And, you know, there was all this fulminating on CNN about how, you know, they have to inject the saline into the breast implants slowly so the body can get used to that. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's great. But I hear that stuff, Sandra, And it's like, oh, well, this must be the segment of important news for the 1% part of the program.
Oh, I know. Not only that, but it's kind of the, you know, the sort of the way regular people take on board this bullshit from these celebrities, too, is also troubling. You know, you're going to get people rushing out now trying to pay for some genetic testing and not understand that there's quite possibly other alternatives than the mutilation, you know, which is always, people are always so readily able to take that on board when it's women, you know, the lobbing off of bits and pieces. And, you know, I'm sorry, I know I may not sound right, but it just rubbed me the wrong way. I thought, oh yeah, I'm looking forward to like lobbing off my tits.
Yeah, don't feel bad because you weren't the only one rubbed the wrong way. I was, you know, because like I said, I was standing in the doctor's office waiting room for $30 cheap blood work Tuesday, and I'm hearing all of this, and then there's this statement she makes. She says this, Sandra. She says, "Life comes with many challenges. The ones that should not scare us are the ones we can take on and take control of."
Right.
Well, that's great.
Along with insurance and good nutrition and rich. Yeah, you can take on whatever you need to. I mean, the absurdity of that is just outrageous in the bigger picture of things. I mean, yeah, lady, good for you and your point.
Yeah, and until every woman in America can take that on and not be afraid of it, let's not talk about not being afraid to take things on, because To me, that just says this is an individual who has never for one instant in her entire life been uninsured.
Well, it just reeks of the entitlement. It just reeks of it. Not only that, but listen, I'd be okay. You could have just kept the whole story to yourself and persevere in privacy. Good for you and your family. I swear to Bob. Okay, I was like, no way. Do I want to hear about it?
Yeah. And that's, again, it's this, is that where we are now, Sandra? That we're having glamour mastectomies?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something, you know, like I said, it's a bit, you know, there's some misogyny in there with the lobbing off of stuff. I don't care. I just find the whole thing really disturbing. And, you know, the whole, well, the rebuilding of it is la la la. It can be beautiful. It's like, what? Huh?
Yeah. See. Oh, but by the way, there is a breast implant story out there that's kind of inspiring, if you can believe it. In France, they've had the biggest trial in their history of these no good bastards.
Horrible, that story.
Who deliberately and knowingly sold breast implants that were filled with industrial-grade silicone. You know, the stuff that maybe you'd caulk your bathroom sink with. And a French prosecutor has said publicly he wants the guy who was behind it all to do jail time. And in 2013, if that happens anywhere in the semi-industrialized world, we go, hey, what a surprise! But, you know, I guess you can get away with saying that in France, but that would be, well, you know, that's just sick if we said it here. You know, and Fox News would be having babies on air and dropping dead in the streets. But prosecutor Jacques Dallet called for PIP founder Jean-Claude Ma to pay a 100,000 euro fine, that's $130,000, and be banned from working in medical services or from ever running a company, and to do jail time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would think that, yeah, it's amazing how it's so isolated now, along with my other favorite prosecute, the rich story, is that bastard in Guatemala. That's an outrageously, that's an amazing story. That they were able to convict this fool.
Yeah, and will exact some sort of justice. One last thing, I hope that if you've got just a second, I wanted to let you know that you just got email in from China.
Oh no.
Yeah, this is from Steve. He says under the subject line "cheap labor," future, based on your question about, you know, where they're going to get it from. Steve says, future sources of cheap labor? That's an easy one. Two words. China, Africa. Government here has been heavily invested in long-term development and exploitation of the continent these past 3 years or so. I mean in terms of media and its propaganda machine. The official English-language news channel here is significantly focused on all things Africa, devoting perhaps half of their analysis and commentary to their new line of interest. The Chinese are not terribly subtle in what they take to be the current concern, but typically they get the job done.
So while those people in China are looking at an increase in standard of living, they're going to shift the factories to Africa? Is that the gist of it?
And leverage the labor force there.
I guess. I mean, but the thing is, the labor force in Africa is not exactly robust.
No, but if anybody can make them that way, well.
Well, yeah, I understand, but I mean, I just think that, you know, we're getting to a critical mass with, you know, how successful you're going to be able to exploit people. I mean, you know, I could be wrong, but, you know, I just think it's just getting to a tipping point because it's so outrageous now.
Oh, and by the way, Irish Dave threw something in for consideration since we were talking about not necessarily being so welcoming of Angelina Jolie's revelation. Irish Dave emailed, to also Magic, Bob Johnson, and HIV. You know, because I was watching the NBA playoffs, and there sits Magic Johnson. And looks great. HIV, mm-hmm. All these years. You know what? If you got enough money.
Yeah, exactly. No. I mean, that's the thing that's always sort of, you know, toxic with these revelations of how I save my health. It's like, well, yeah, that $1 trillion you have will go a long ways towards it.
Yeah, and 2 days later, they're somewhere delivering a motivational speech about how money can't buy happiness.
Oh, yeah, there's always that. I mean, they, you know, who is that speech always coming from?
It ain't coming from the poor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, but at the end, you know, at any rate, I probably just sound really horrible, but that whole story just kind of, you know, bugged the shit out of me, man.
No, don't feel bad because you kind of opened the door for my, because I'm a little bit more chicken than you are. You will say things straight, and you've got an authenticity to say it, seeing as how, and I'm not trying to be grotesque or overt or anything, you've got a dog in the fight. You're a female.
Well, I also don't have a radio show, and I don't have to be concerned with the various bits and pieces that you do.
Well, no, but you know what? I will tell you this. In the late night Skype chats, people keep saying, "We want the Sandra Show, Bob. We want the Sandra Show." And they've even gone so far as to name it for you. It's welcome to My Last Nerve with Sandra.
Okay, well, next time I call, I'll have a opening song for it, too.
Sounds good. Sandra, you have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Bye. Right,
bye now. Yeah, that got talked about, and it's like, yeah, that would work. Oh, goodness me. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
I'm fine. Enjoyed listening to Sandra. I always do.
absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, what she said about that whole story, I think, is entirely valid.
Yeah.
It's been spun out there as some sort of happy story, but how many millions of women in this country aren't going to be able to afford the genetic testing, aren't going to have the best plastic surgeon in the world, and aren't going to get, you know, you could go on and on and on, and I think it's entirely valid.
Yeah, it is. Also, I wanted to bring up, you know, the women that were attacked by these officers in the military, and I just wanted to say they are lucky they were not attacked by one of my relatives of a lady, because if they did, they would spend the rest of their life in Vienna in the boys' choir singing soprano.
Yeah, I get the idea. You were raised around some mighty strong women.
I sure was. You didn't mess with those ladies. Anyway, I just wanted to lighten the thing up a bit, because earlier, after all those horrible things about those poor animals. I grew up in my granddad in the old family home. We had a barn and stables and all that, and a great big chicken yard. And every now and then, my grandmother would say, "Well, we're going to have chicken and dumplings for Sunday dinner," and she'd point out the old hens she wanted to use. And I didn't chase them all over the chicken yard. I would catch them with a crab net, if you know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got a long pole and it has a net on the end of it. And I'd catch them with a crab net, and then I'd go in, and and then they'd be very, very nice about it. They'd just stick their head out, and I'd go whack with my little hatchet, and that was it. But I had been reading quite a bit as a child, so every time I did that, I replayed the French Revolution, and the chicken was always Marie Antoinette. And somebody asked me one time, they said, "Well, did you wear a black hood?" I said, "Heavens, no. My grandmother was Victorian. She wouldn't have allowed that." And
but you know, also, but you know what? When your chicken comes from the chicken yard that you're having for Sunday dinner, there's something a little more real about that. A, you know where it came from.
For anything, and I just, with my little hatchet, I just went quack. And there went Marie Antoinette again. So anyway.
So all the hens were eventually named Marie.
Yes. Anyhow.
Hey, Grandma, who gets to be Marie today?
Yeah. Anyway, she had a chicken, a hen, that was a real good layer, but this chicken got her internal clock sort of messed up, so she would molt in the middle of the winter. So my grandmother knitted her a sweater. We were the only person in town that had a chicken walking around the chicken yard wearing a sweater.
I'm surprised it didn't catch on.
Well, me too. Now you know why I'm rather eccentric.
No, you're not eccentric, Edward. You are uniquely American.
Well, take care.
I sure will. Edward, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Chicken sweaters, I'm telling you, it could be the next big thing. What a night. What an amazing series of conversations. Thank you, one and all. Pretty much close to time to get out of here. Of course, now that I'm not going to D.C., it should be a, to the extent this program ever is, normal remainder of the week. You know, join us tomorrow night for prayer meeting. Already got the sound bites lined up. It's going to be kind of easy. You can look for folks like Michelle Bachman and Steve King. And yeah, it's going to be a real hoot. Thanks to Cindy. Cindy is the only one who kicked in on the attempts at fundraising, taking us from the need to raise $245 to trying to raise a little less than $200. Thank you very much, Cindy. Been a couple of tough nights fundraising, so thanks to everybody who helped out along those lines. It's the only thing that keeps this going. If you would like to help out, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the mailing address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Remember, checks, money orders should not be payable to Bob Kincaid, but to Head On Communications or the Horn or something like that, because that makes it possible for Boss Man Wayne to actually negotiate them at the bank. Or more properly, credit union. When fundraising falls to a level like it is now, well, you just kind of hope there'll be a month. Hope we'll be here in June. And that's not the Oral Roberts "God's Gonna Call Me Home" speech or anything. It's just the reality of having to pay bills to corporate America to keep this whole thing cooking. So thank you for those of you who have helped and do help. No apologies necessary. In the chat room, I'm currently unemployed. I wish I could. If you can't, you can't. It's okay. Don't feel bad. If you can, whether it's $5, $10, please do.
It'll all work out. It has a way of doing that. So we're pretty much at the end of the program. Not really any room to do another story. But if anybody wants to do a little digging around, I'd love to find out the vote tally out of the Senate Agriculture Committee today. 15-5 was the vote to slash food for hungry people payments at the same time that they voted to increase insurance subsidies, crop insurance subsidies. You know, even for people who don't acknowledge that global climate catastrophe is real, that's kind of a tacit acknowledgement, isn't it? But the fact of the matter is, some combination of Democrats and Republicans on the Senate Agriculture Committee voted to take away food from people who can't, who have nothing else to have taken away from them. It's tough. It is brutally difficult in this country. So y'all have a good evening, and we'll be talking again tomorrow. Thanks to the all-volunteer staff who make so much of this so much fun to do. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Hope you get feeling better, Betsy. Stay in touch. Let me know. Betsy's a little under the weather. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox down in Australia, who makes all the incredibly complicated audio equipment work, as well as keeping the website up and going. Thank you, John. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who literally, for more than 10 years, has been preserving and saving and making available progressive radio on the Internet, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And he has never, ever, ever sent a bill. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. We started off this evening talking a little bit about the AIC Act. I hope you'll get busy on it. I know you already have been. But we must advocate ceaselessly. And when you hear something back from your member of Congress, let us know. That way we can act in concert together. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.